Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Doesn't the suit have like a dozen of those apps on his phone?
Probably.
Plus a AAA app. All right. We've had some problems. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory. With the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, terrific service department that backs it up. Routine, difficult, handling it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, time now for Neil Coulon. Sir, welcome.
As always, it's great to be here. Happy Super Bowl week to you and everybody out there.
Let's start with the Brock Purdy story. And to me, the Brock Purdy story is more the $870,000 a year. What does that potentially do for the 49ers long term, meaning the next couple of years, maybe three in this window, to build a team any way they wish to because of that $870,000 a year?
I think it comes down to your team's philosophy. There's a lot of things obviously that you can do, and if you look at the difference between $870,000 for a team that over the last 2 years, really with Purdy, they're at the Super Bowl level. You're challenging me off the top of my head. I'm not sure what the average salary would be for a quarterback, but obviously any of them on a rookie contract gives you the advantage of $25 million a year, additional space.
Absolutely. I mean, same level. I mean, he's not even remotely close. He's like the 31st highest paid quarterback in the starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get much lower than that. You know,
literally Lamar Jackson in 11 minutes of game time makes as much money as Brock Purdy.
That's what I was thinking. And the fact that he's on the level that he's at pretty consistently shows you they're able to get a lot of run out of a player that the market suggests cannot be doing what he's doing. That gives you the ability. This really depends on how a team wants to structure it. You can get one more player with that. You could pay somebody else a lot of money in free agency if you want to do that. You're able to extend a couple more players over the next couple of years, presumably before Purdy would become a lot more expensive. One thing, though, that people need to recognize is, yes, on an individual level, they're getting highway robbery at the quarterback position. But every agent in the NFL is negotiating against their salary cap position as well as the market. So if they're this far below the cap, and you're typically paying at this level, and the market of the league says normally a player at this position is making across the league 15% of the cap. I'm making that number up.
Sure.
That's what they're going for their client. The fact that the 49ers do not have a quarterback eating up a lot of cap space can work against them in a way. In that they're going to end up paying more out to other players. They're not going to be able to get market level deals individually when you are going to be that much farther below the cap compared to everybody else relative to the fact that you don't pay your quarterback anything. In other words, they're not going to be able to get away with it overall. I understand that if we want to break it down as simply as that, they have a huge advantage. They do have more money to spend than other teams will, but they're going to pay for that in other ways. Other players are going to be a little bit more expensive than other mm-hmm. teams are going to have to pay for them just simply because of their cap position. So they're absolutely – it's a problem every team would love to have, don't get me wrong, but right. It will drive the market up four other players. And when you have the star power that the 49ers do, you're looking at, these are Hall of Fame level players, a guy like George Kittle, Trent Williams, Christian McCaffrey, adding Deebo Samuel to that. It's not just the quarterback position that they're doing really well at. Their entire offensive line, beyond Williams, is pretty affordable, and they play pretty well. Nick Bosa in that, he's getting paid quite a bit of money. They've got other players around that defense, though, that aren't, that are contributing at a very high level. So it's everything regarding the salary cap is cyclical. They can get away with a lot of that, but it's not something that's going to last for the duration of Purdy's rookie contract. They're going to have to pay for and replace other players during that time, in some cases, because of the fact that they're not paying as much for the quarterback. Yeah. They're going to have to overpay elsewhere.
Because this is the Russell Wilson Seattle Seahawks model when he was a third-round pick. They were able to get Bobby Averill, Percy Harvin as free agents. And then they were able to secure their entire secondary, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, because their quarterback was on a third-round deal, not a seventh-round deal, a third-round deal. And in the short term, it made them a power. And my point about San Francisco is, in the short term, they can be a power because their quarterback isn't going to be draining that $25 million a year.
Yep, they're going to have the flexibility to keep a lot of the guys that they have, and from there, you get lucky with health, which is a huge factor to all of this.
Yes.
You're able to keep a core together for longer than everybody else. Now, you got to get that core right, and the core's got to stay in place, which Seattle was able to do when Wilson was there. What I was thinking of was Baltimore before Joe Flacco had to get paid. I remember, if you recall, Bryant McKinney from back in the day. He's a player that notoriously didn't exactly keep himself in great shape.
Right.
They were able to sign him as a free agent, and they paid him at that point. It was a fairly decent chunk of money. It was something like $6-7 million, and he didn't play until the playoffs.
Right.
He worked himself into shape. They could afford that because their quarterback wasn't making anything. Vontae Leach is one of the best fullbacks in NFL history for what a fullback purely does in a modern offense. He played 12 snaps a game. They could afford to pay him $3 million a year to play those 12 snaps because their quarterback wasn't making anything. So you're able to set up, even beyond the core, other players that can be positionally or situationally very important to your team. You can overpay for those types of players within the market and set up something dominant based solely on your ability to keep a group together that can do just one thing very well, whereas every other team that's paying a quarterback probably can't afford to bring players like that in if they can only play, in 8, 9, 10 snaps a game. And that's what Baltimore was able to do. San Francisco's in a position where their core guys who do play four quarters a game and are playing at a very high level, and frankly were there and doing that before, during, and currently with Purdy, they're able to put all of that together. So, it's a situation where you would assume San Francisco can keep this team together for at least one more season beyond this and perhaps be playing in the game again next year.
Roger Goodell stumbled a bit yesterday when it came to the issue of concussions in the league, but he did not stumble at all when it came to the issue of streaming. And he was asked about streaming the Super Bowl, and he says, "Not as long as I'm commissioner." What did you think of that statement by him, especially in light of the Dolphins-Chiefs game that was earlier in the playoffs?
The knee-jerk reaction, just kind of laughing to myself, was that it probably means he's retiring after the Super Bowl. But it definitely did not land well to have the playoff game streaming. I think we've talked about this before. Sometimes you need to have the negative mark against you. Sometimes you got to take the hit for the sake of learning everything about it. What does it look like? What is the market reaction to it? You can talk about things all the time, and there is social media buzz, and there's a big outrage, but this might not be the most appropriate parallel, but people talk about concussions and the safety of the game and injuries and everything like that. It's this huge black mark against the game, yet no one's stopping to, everyone's continuing to watch. So it's not as if all of these issues are really, financially speaking, they're not of a gigantic concern to the NFL in the sense that they can get a lot of negative publicity and people are still keeping their TVs on. Now, the manner in which they're watching the game on their TV or device or whatever, that's a future concern, but it's an option for the NFL. I think it's worth looking at. And for them to know the real answer to that question, they got to test it in real time. They've got to see what it's like with big money on the line, just to get a sense of the direction. I would imagine, looking at the numbers and weighing that along with a very negative reaction to it, they wouldn't have interest in streaming a Super Bowl only. That's the only way that they were able to do it. So for Goodell to come out and staunchly be against it as if, you know, they weren't responsible a month earlier for doing it, completely justifying the question that was being asked, it's kind of typical political NFL. I'm not surprised by his response. I would imagine most people would reasonably have guessed they would not have pursued it beyond the playoff game that they did. But to be fair, as a business, sometimes you need to know definitively what that answer is and not just operate off what you think it's going to be, because a lot of hidden numbers. You know, there are a lot of people that watch it anyway. I didn't really notice. If you talk to me an issue of quality, I didn't notice the difference beyond right. The game itself. Yeah. I thought it was kind of boring. But it's not like it was an avenue the NFL couldn't go down if it wanted to. And it needs to know the answer to that question for future's sake, for planning, for what they're trying to do. They need to know the answer to that. Figuring that for the Super Bowl, I don't think is a real good idea, but it'll help them in terms of negotiations in the future, and that's probably what it was about more than anything else.
Right, and when you look at it, though, they talk about the 23 million that streamed it. That's impressive. And then you look at the AFC and NFC title games that were both in the 50s. In other words, they cut off, in my opinion, 27 to 30 million of their audience by doing this. What business wants to do that?
That's a good question. I wonder, and off the top of my head, I'm not going to know it either. I wonder what the ratings differences between the wild card and the championship game are typically.
That's a really good question. But see, the difference is that when I'm sitting there and the NFC Championship game is on, and it's on CBS, they're also airing it on Paramount Plus. See, that's what you need to be aiming for, where I'm going maximum audience. So if you want to stream on Paramount Plus, I've got the game. If I'm here, I can watch on over the air. And I think that's what they should be aiming for, to then, if they want to gradually do it, sure. I think trying to go cold turkey like they did with the Dolphins-Chiefs game, and you're right, it was not an exciting game to watch, but it was also like 0 degrees out, and I'm like, okay, let's watch this thing, all right? And so I did. But to me, that's the aim, maximum audience. I think you're always looking for that, and the combination of the two gives you maximum audience. That's my opinion.
Yeah, you'd think that would be the point, right? I mean, they would want to get as many ways to put their product in front of people's eyes as possible. And for me, I wouldn't have noticed. You know, I'm a streaming guy. I have a lot of those things anyway. That's
sure.
Probably how I'm even watching it and not even realizing it anymore.
Okay. Can I ask you something? Compared to your old cable bill and with all the streaming sites you have, are you saving money?
Not in a significant way, and yeah. I think the market determines there's a certain amount of money that people are going to spend, and from there, what they're trying to do is give the user the most amount of product for what they're spending. With cable, there was a sense of convenience. You're used to it. I know this because we're trying to set my mom up with the same thing, and she can't figure out an app to save her life.
Right.
It's more of, I have to click a few more buttons to get to what I need to, but now I can get all the stuff that I want at maybe a little, if you want to call like $20 a month a significant saving,
sure. Let's
see. And it certainly can be, but I'm also, pretty plugged in to an embarrassing level. So I think there are people that definitely are saving money, but, 200 versus, call it, 175, somewhere in there. Right. That's with premium. That's with a very high-speed plan. I'm probably making out better the way that I'm doing it, which is why I'm doing it. But I wouldn't call the savings the primary focus of it. It's just more whittling down the stuff that I don't want and getting exactly what I do want.
How do you view the game this week?
I have bet against Kansas City too many times this year, and I keep getting the same feeling after every single game. And this time, I can't do it because, incidentally, I've bet for San Francisco way too many times this year, and they've let me down with games that's like, wow, I don't know, what did you guys eat last night? I mean, they're not consistently as good as they should be. And Kansas City, it's we talked about Pittsburgh a lot like this season. They have a way of making you come down to their level wherever they're at. And as Baltimore learned, if you want to go toe to toe with Patrick Mahomes, you don't need to just, obviously you need to outscore him, but it doesn't have to be a track race anymore. He can beat you 17-10 on the road. And he can beat you on a 40-yard completion because you're in the completely wrong defense for what they're trying to do. They identified it and made you pay for it. And they can do that four or five times a game. And they've figured out defensively. I thought Steve Spagnuolo did a phenomenal job last week in stopping Baltimore. Nobody's giving him credit for that. Well, the only thing we can talk about is how allegedly badly Lamar Jackson played. I don't think it was that at all. But they have the ability to win those key downs, and that's the trademark, in my opinion, of your high-level team, because they can get away with, as Belichick would say it, 70 plays in a game, 58 to 60 of them are going to be split more or less down the middle because pros are playing against pros. Right. It's those other 10 to 12 plays in the game that are going to make the difference, ultimately. Kansas City is winning 8 to 10 of those plays every game now. And they're not doing it pretty the way that they used to. And Patrick Mahomes has gotten so smart. And Andy Reid has drawn up so much for him in terms of, fifth-level options, fifth-level looks of plays to make. They're able to win those key downs. I mean, just look at the third-down difference between Baltimore and Kansas City last week.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan, a coach that I have a huge amount of respect for, and I love watching his teams play. I love seeing what he's doing. He hasn't gotten to that point. They don't win those types of plays and downs consistently. And you knew Detroit wasn't going to. 21-3 for the Lions on the road in the championship game. No, that's not going to last. And it not only did it last, but San Francisco won fairly comfortably by the end. I mean, they did. completely blew them away in the second half. That's a better team, but San Francisco still has those long lapses of, like, what are you guys doing? They're not going to get away with that against Kansas City, and I think San Francisco should win. I think San Francisco is the better team, but I think it's just going to be a play-to-play battle, and Mahomes is just going to be too much at the end. I think Kansas City's going to win.
My friend, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time you always give us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulon. Come back. More in a moment. So how many of those gambling apps are on the Suits phone?
That's a good question. There's plenty of them, so I would guess at least 4 or 5.
I mean, people I've never heard of. Like Bobby's gambling app. Like, who's Bobby? I mean,
that must be a local one.
Or else it's like in the dark web somewhere. So, okay. The Super Bowl, we'll get to. And we'll have some fun with prop bets at the end of the week. This was a funny one. Seth Davis said that South Carolina men's basketball should be ranked. And then they put out the AP ballot, and he forgot to rank them. It's like, oops.
Yeah, I did see you apologize. In Seth's defense, he did lose his job last week.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I'm just one of those pieces of irony, all right? Not to be critical, because, look, you can make the statement that you're going through, or you're trying to concentrate on it, and you forget. That happens. It's just a poll. It's no big deal. They ended up being ranked anyway, right? So, but it was just one of those ironic, like, oh, okay.
I just, it might be too quick. Did you see what happened on WFAN this morning? They booked the wrong Randy Moss. That's my nightmare.
Did they book which one?
They booked the horse racing writer instead of the football player.
And who's a great guy, by the way. Randy Moss, he works a lot with Dick Girardi. Dick has a lot of respect for him. But yes, that is not the Randy Moss who wore 84 with the Vikings and Patriots.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, and they have great warranties. So important. Pre-owned inventory, they go over all of it, fine-tooth comb, makes the buying experience better. And a service department that backs it up with routine service. Difficult. They handle them all. They're always looking for new technicians at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. One quick note about, as you know, I barely mention if somebody's a Big Ten player of the week. You know, if it's, you know, Penn State athlete. Like, Ashley Owosu was the women's player of the week in the Big Ten. And Ashley's been playing great for the Lady Lion basketball team. But, like, football, I'll mention it, and then that's it. When you move to the next one, that, you know, it's, I make no big deal out of it because it's a big deal to the person, it's a big deal to the program, but for the most part, it's not a big deal. Okay. Last week, Penn State went on the road twice, won twice. Ace Baldwin played all 80 minutes. And at the very least, you know, you'd say to yourself, I mean, Dick Girardi made the comment at the end of the broadcast, if he's not the Big Ten Player of the Week, you're not paying attention. Okay. Well, the Player of the Week of the Big Ten was Zach Edey. Edey had 18 points against Wisconsin, and he had a 30-15 game against Northwestern. But here's the problem with that. The Purdue-Northwestern game in no way, shape, or form made the Big Ten look good. It just didn't. So this is what they've done to compound the problem of a game that didn't look good. Because on the surface, Northwestern had won earlier in the year. Now this game's 81-81 into regulation. This game goes into overtime. Purdue finally wins it. I mean, so on the surface, it looks great. But this was the game of the 46-8 disparity in free throws. During regulation, Northwestern attempted two free throws and made one. That was it. Zach Edey in this game ended up with 30 points and 15 rebounds. On the surface, that looks great. Until you look into it. He was 9 of 17 at the free throw line. So he made more free throws than Northwestern attempted for the 45 minutes. And he had twice as many attempts as the entire Northwestern team had in the 45 minutes. He only made 9. To be honest with you, that's not good. They fined Chris Collins $5,000 because he was mad about it. if I'm in a game, look, I'm not saying that, that there should be 10 free throws a side. Never. Style of play enters into it. You know, sometimes you have an off night, your contact is too much. Got it. I've done a lot of games in my career, I know. And we'll talk about that. Sometimes you'll see a free throw disparity in a Penn State game where Penn State's not getting as many free throws. And I'll say straight out on the broadcast that, Dick, that's a style of play issue there. And Dick will jump in and agree. Because we've done a lot of games. Okay. And then sometimes it's not. Well, style of play might come into play if the disparity had been 20 to 22 attempts versus 8. 46 to 8 is absurd. That's absurd. And that's a problem. And the coach is not supposed to get upset about that in a game that was 81-81 at the end of regulation, where one more free throw attempt for his team, one more, could have won the game in regulation. In other words, that third free throw attempt. If his team was allowed to get a third free throw attempt, they may not have needed to go to overtime. Third free throw attempt. Third. Equivalent to Zach Edey's second trip to the line. So he gets $5,000 in fines because he's mad about a 46-8 free throw disparity. He gets publicly reprimanded because of a 46-8 disparity in free throws. And Zach Edey gets rewarded as the Big Ten Player of the Week because he had a 30-15 because he took 17 attempts and made 9 of them. And he had 18 against Wisconsin on Sunday, which was a big-time game on the road, the whole thing. I got it. I understand that. But at each step of the way, the Big Ten has not gone out. In each step revolving around that game, they already had bad publicity on that game to begin with, and they've been compounding it since. Fine, Chris Collins. Okay. Publicly reprimanded Chris Collins. Oh, and by the way, one of the guys in the game who had a 30-15, they rewarded him with Player of the Week, and he made 9 out of 17 free throws. Which, by the way, the 9 made free throws are more than the opponent attempted. The 17 is twice as many as they attempted. One guy. And I know people are hitting him and hanging on him and the whole thing. I got that. I understand that. But in a game that really, in the end, should have made the conference look great, in the end did not make the conference look great, and yet you keep doing things revolving around that game where you find the coach that's mad about it, you publicly reprimand the coach that's mad about it, and you give a guy in the opposing team who benefited from it the Player of the Week. Okay. Interesting.
Could it just be simply, well, not simply, but, you know, he's also the easy choice just because he's the one everybody knows?
Yeah, but Ace Baldwin, as an example, and there are other people that, like, you know, Cam Christie at Minnesota was the freshman of the week. He had a really terrific week, too. But Ace Baldwin, they go on the road twice and they win twice. And he plays all 80 minutes. And runs the show, dished out, what, 18 assists in the two games? So 9 assists per game. Averaged, what, 17 and a half, 18 points a game? I'm not saying he should be or shouldn't be, but doggone, that's a pretty good week for a guy.
It also doesn't take into account he was playing without Kanye either.
Right. I mean, he had to do more. But I'm not here saying he should get it over. But it, like, for example, I have no issue with Edey. None. I mean, National Player of the Year, I have a vote. But you know darn well he's going to be one of the guys I'm deeply, seriously considering. Okay? So this has nothing to do with Zach. But I look at that one game that did not, a game that was 81-81 at the end of regulation, goes into overtime that on the surface should really make the conference look good. And in the end, when people looked at the numbers and went, holy mackerel, they took 46 free throw attempts and Northwestern took 8? Wow. That's the largest disparity. They went back 25 years and could not find a game that had a 38 free throw disparity. They went back 25 years, they couldn't find it. Like, that's doesn't what should be on the surface, wow, what a game. And then you look at it and go, ooh, that's a problem. Right? And then you find the coach who's mad about it. Well, no offense, I'd be darn mad about it too. I'm not saying that 46 to 8, but geez, I mean, how about 20 to 26 to 8? Or how about 46 to 28 or 46 to 22 or something? But 46 to 8? That's way too big a disparity. And Dick and I were watching the game on Dick's phone. We're like, geez. Like it wasn't that there weren't fouls that Northwestern was called for. It was like, it was more that, geez, Northwestern is going downhill and they're not getting a call and going to the free throw line. Boo Booey got hammered one time, got nothing out of it. We're like, okay. And then at the other end, foul. You're like, okay. So you take this game that should have covered the Big Ten in glory. People look at it and go, oh, man, that is not, wow, that's a disparity. And then you find the coach who got mad about it. Well, I would have been mad. I would have been fined. I'd have said something like, hey, what's going on here? You publicly reprimand him. Well, I would have been publicly reprimanded too because I would have said something. I'm talking about as a coach. I wouldn't say it as a broadcaster. You're just, at that point, you're just stating facts. And then one of the key players in the game who had more free throw makes than my team attempted for 45 minutes is the player of the week. Really? And 9 of 17, by the way, is a lousy free throw percentage. That's lousy. But he's the player of the week. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. I just think that that game, I know the Wisconsin game was two top six teams head-to-head. Purdue won the game. And to be honest with you, I thought Edie played well, but like not great. He looked tired to me. Okay. And he looked like he played tired.
I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure it's not easy on him, you know.
Oh,
that,
no,
that's
he
a
gets,
lot of people
no, no.
hanging on him.
No, I mean, look, I mean, they're running second people at him. Yeah. He's getting belted left and right. But the issue is the 46 to 8 free throw disparity. That's the issue in all this. Like, okay, you didn't look good to begin with in the game, and all you're doing is every step you've made since the game is you've compounded it. Right? That's what I'm sitting there like going, guys, stop making it worse. Okay? Because you're not coming out looking great doing this. You got a lot of people saying, well, if it's 46 to 8, I'll tell you right now, they'd be fining me too. Right?
He handled it about as well as I think you could handle it without
right.
without absolutely
I mean, not,
losing it.
Right. Now, I don't know what he said in his press conference.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit there. I don't know.
I'm also guessing the $5,000 is for coming out onto the court.
I guess. I mean, you notice how Chris waited to the end of the game? Like there's 1.8 seconds to go.
Well, I also like that he got it under control enough that before he left, he shook Painter's hand and dapped up Edie before he left the floor.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, he did do that. It's like, okay. To me, it's just like every step they've taken since that game. Like, guys, okay, wait a minute. Okay. Now, I don't know. It didn't look to me like Chris made contact with any official. I know Taylor Battle held him back. So I don't know if he made any. If he made contact, that's an automatic. I mean, that's something I'd have to take a long look at. But I'd be mad too. 46-8 is like, holy mackerel. I mean, okay, I expect Purdue to have more free throw attempts than I do. I do expect that. I expect that in every game that they do. So I'm not surprised by it, and not because Purdue gets any benefit. I'm not saying that. But when you've got a guy like Edie, there's going to be more contact, more hanging on. So you do expect there's going to be some more free throw attempts, but not 38 more. I mean, when you're averaging one free throw attempt per minute and your opponent's averaging one free throw attempt every 6 minutes, that's kind of a big disparity. And you expect the coach to sit there and go, you know what, that's just the way she goes. I'm not mad.
Just how they're calling the game.
Yeah, it's just the way it goes. Oh, well, my team tried. No, you're going to sit there like, I'd be like, what the heck's going on here? This is ridiculous. If it's 26-8, I'd be like, what, 46-8? Yikes. I'd be over there right now putting together a GoFundMe page to help me with the fine. It's just like, you know, it's like, come on, guys. I mean, I know they're not playing them, and the only time they'll play them again will be in the Big Ten tournament. But, wow. And then, yeah, I know he had 30 and 15, but you can't just look at the base number. Like, how did he get there? Like, okay, I know how he got there. Oh, well. All right. They're talking about on the Dartmouth thing, which I thought this line cracked me up on the Dartmouth thing, on the National Labor Relations Board. It was, where is it here? What matters is if the program brings in revenue and also whether coaches have control over the players. Really? It's not whether they turn to profit. Well, number one is, Todd and I pointed out, if we buy a ticket to Saturday's Dartmouth-Harvard game at Lead Arena, that would be, now we're going high-end here because Todd and I are high rollers, that'd be $12 a ticket. Suit would be out there trying to see if he could get it for $6. Okay. But that would be $24 in revenue. See, we generated revenue. Right? Okay. And this part about whether coaches have control over players. Well, we all have bosses. Do you have a boss?
Yeah, you insult him a lot.
What? Okay. Now, Todd. Okay. Has he earned everything I've said?
Maybe not everything. Most of it, though.
What part has been wrong?
Okay.
Wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I knew you'd see it my way.
I tried. I'm trying to be nice.
Oh, no, I'm nice about it. I just, you know, but, you know, everybody knows that, you know, it's just the way it is. It's not like he's out and about and they don't see it. You have no words. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about it. It's fine. You know? Could, you know, it could be worse. I mean, you could have a 46-day free throw disparity and get fined. But yeah. You know what? Let's be honest about it. You know, if it were 46-4, it probably would be better. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Here we go. And you know what? That game should have been one that covered the league in glory. And it's like it made more people question what's going on.
I just, you talked to last week about, you know, how that the Big Ten officiating affects them in the NCAA tournament, and that's just, I can't imagine Purdue's going to get that many calls in a first-round game.
There is no way in heckin' the entire weekend, say they get through the first weekend, they may not get 46 free throw attempts in the weekend, let alone in a game. So, hey, we'll see. I mean, right now they'd be in line to be a one seed. How about Kansas last night? Went to Kansas State, lost in overtime. That's 11 straight wins in overtime for Kansas State.